growing farther east, as far as Izmir and Constantinople.
Yes.
He said that.
But evidently, few settled in Palestine. Would you say something about that?
Because it wasn't easy to get to. It was very hard to get to.
It's true, to get to Izmir.
Yeah, but to then travel. First of all, Palestine was a desert, was a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. Even what?
Still is.
No, it was a disaster. Palestine was literally a disaster. There was no way to make a living there.
Was there this passion that we hear about, this passion to return to the Holy Land?
Was there the well, part of basic Jewish prayers involve a prayer that it's in every prayer, every main prayer about returning to the land of Israel.
That's my question. Right.
Yeah, but it was virtually impossible. Only very few went. The living conditions, it was primitive. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's more than that. I believe that there was even a controversy here when Israel was, when the process of statehood was underway, that those religious Jews, there was this heard that the idea was that when the Messiah comes, when Mashiach comes, that's when they go to Israel. So settling the state, or the idea of settling the land, I think it was part and parcel of a religious belief. It was when the Messiah was supposed to come.
Actually, the coming of the Messiah is related to the establishment of a Jewish state. Going to live in Israel was never really a problem. It's the establishment of a Jewish state. That in the time of the Messiah, it's the establishment of the state. But going to Israel and living in Israel, there were always some who did it, but the conditions were terribly primitive. As late as the 19th century, even later, it was a desert. There was no way to make a living. I'll tell you a story. I spoke, maybe, I don't know if anybody remembers, I spoke about Rabbi Israel Salanta. And Rabbi Israel Salanta, he's in the 19th century, and he was asked at one point whether the Jews should go to Israel or to America. And the person who asked him recorded, wrote down what happened. He said, and Salanta was a great Jewish leader, and he says that he got up and he began to pace back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He was a big, deep thinker. In fact, at one point he was arrested by the authorities in Germany because he was jaywalking or whatever he was doing because he was in deep thought. And then it was written on his passport, immersed in philosophical thought, so they should leave him alone if he was found wandering around. Anyway, he began to pace back and forth. And then the guy writes, the veins on his head began to stand out, and back and forth. And finally he said, let them go to America. So the fellow said to him, this is now in the 19th century, but isn't it true if they go to America, the chances are that they will not remain observant? He said, yes. And he said to him, but if they go to Palestine, aren't the chances they will remain observant? So he said, Salanta answered, yeah. So he said, then why did you say they should go to America? He said, you have to understand. In Israel, in the land there in Palestine, they will not be able to earn a living. They will become paupers. They will not be able to survive. Better to go to America where there's economic opportunity. Now that's how far he went. Then when somebody said, well, if we can support them in Israel, should they go? He said, absolutely yes. That's how bad the conditions were. Now, it's interesting that in the time of Shabtai Tzvi, which is the 17th century, when they thought that he was the Messiah, they were ready to go. They were ready. In fact, business stopped in Jewish countries. It absolutely stopped. It was unbelievable.
I have the impression, this is only an impression, that in Jewish circles, the victimization of Jews, discussions of victimization of Jews, is like a mechaya.
They say, what's Judaism?
Hey?
They say, what is Judaism? They tried to kill us. We were successful. Let's eat.
That's the answer.
Well, the fact of the matter is that a lot of Jewish blood has been spilled over the centuries. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's a lot of other blood has been spilled over the centuries, by the way.
From what springs this passion to be discussing it endlessly?
Because it dominated their lives.
Not the only thing that did.
No, but that really dominated their lives.
Well,
when I think of the Crusades, what comes to mind is the fact that as they swept across Europe, they wiped out Jewish communities left and right. You read the books about the Crusades, so they brought this and that to the East, and I think of the Crusades, they were bloody for the Jews. That was a fact. It was a fact. I mean, the Jewish history is replete with and so it's only natural that this should be something that people... Jews remember. Judaism is a religion of remembering, and of giving thanks when you're saved. Purim, which was a festival we just had, is if you read the book of Esther, there's the story about how Haman wanted to wipe out the Jews, and the Jews were able to survive, and that's considered a big miracle, and that's celebrated every year. These are parts of our history. This is generic. Yes.
This is entirely off topic from the topic Carol brought up, but I don't know much about this, but friends of mine were in New Mexico, where they got involved in a scholarly enterprise of rediscovering communities of crypto-Jews in New Mexico, and they found headstones supposedly with the Birkat HaKohanim, with the priestly blessing on the headstones.
Right.
And that the descendants of these so-called crypto-Jews had no idea where they stemmed from or where these ceremonies and rites came from. They just knew that this was some rite from their family. But they would do things like, you know, Friday night, light candles, do things that, you know, were part and parcel of a Jewish rite. But they had no idea. And supposedly there was a fairly extensive community there.
There's a book called Acts of Faith. And in it, he talks about a number of these fringe, I'll call them for want of a better word, Jewish communities. He talks about what happened in Mexico, and there was an attempt actually to bring these people back, which failed abysmally. Okay? He talks about, I don't know if you're aware, that there was a Jewish community in China. A Jewish community in China in Kaifeng. Okay? Which is gone. Okay? How they came there, why they came there, no one knows, okay? He talks about the Meshedi Jews. These are the Jews in Iran who were forced to convert. I think I spoke about them one time here. They were forced to convert in 1840 to Judaism, and they actually maintained Judaism secretly, and they actually stuck with the Judaism, so that when they were able to leave Iran, they remained Jews, and they kept most of their Jewish practices. You have Meshedi Jews today. They're around. The whole big community of them in Great Neck and various other places, etc. So he talks about these fringe groups, and there are little pieces that in some way or other don't go away. You know, my mother did it, and her mother did it, and her mother did it, and her mother did it, and why are you doing it? I don't know. My mother did it, so I do it. That's the way I you know.
I think even in Spain, some families, they had one or two things they did, turning the pictures against the wall, that they had no idea, since you know the religion was eradicated pretty much in Spain.
Right.
They had no idea why they were doing that. It was just cultural remnants, basically.
Yeah, no, it really is quite amazing why this just didn't die. But apparently it didn't. Apparently it didn't. So there was in New Mexico, actually there is in Brazil itself, because there was a vibrant Jewish community in Recife in Brazil from 1630 to 1654 when the Dutch controlled a certain part of Brazil and they allowed the open practice of Judaism, and there were people then who went back into the woodwork rather than leave. Most Jews left. So there are, yeah, and there's a whole now interest in people trying to discover their background and this and that, yeah. Anyone else?
Just a quick comment. The Gallup was the Spanish favorite execution mode until 50 years ago.
Really?
Just like the guillotine in France, disappeared shortly after World War II, and under Franco, people were still guillotined.